The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Time for the biggest stories of the day, the news that we're covering here. And that leads us to
The Big Lead, Big Local.
An armed man was shot dead outside the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma. The man was 69-year-old Willem Van Spronzen of Vashon Island. He was previously arrested last year for protesting outside the Northwest Detention Center. His friend, Deanne English, says this was not suicide by cop.
They murdered him, and he was probably just standing his ground, because that's what he does.
Do you think he wanted to die?
No. I think that he wanted to make a statement to stop this.
Okay, let's review. You've brought firebombs to a federal facility that you're throwing, and you have a rifle as well. And you're headed over there with in full-fledged attack, lighting things on fire and throwing these things. And yet your friends say
they murdered him, and he was probably just standing his ground.
You don't stand your ground in the middle of the street attacking other facilities. The stand your ground law is not that's not an interpretation that's recognized of the stand your ground law. You know, if someone's attacking you or somebody's attacking your house, then you're okay. But if you're attacking another facility and then lo and behold, the law enforcement shows up and says, please drop the firebombs and the rifle, a different circumstance altogether. Now, the friends of this individual, Willem Van Spronzen, rather, of Vashon Island, the 69-year-old who was shot dead outside the facility, they're defending him. Even while they're sharing this manifesto he sent hours before he died. Now, in the manifesto, it seems to indicate he was willing to die for his cause. Cairo 7 Television was at the vigil.
Mourn not the dead that in the cool earth lie.
A vigil Sunday night.
I am very so sad.
For 69-year-old Willem Van Spronzen from Vashon Island.
This human did whatever he felt he had to do.
Those who knew him said he was here to protest this Immigration and Customs Enforcement Detention Center in Tacoma.
He was a firm believer in what he stood for, and he absolutely hated these detention centers.
Tacoma police say Van Spronzen tried to set the detention center on fire and tried to ignite this large propane tank. You can see burn marks under it from what looks like a burned-out road flare. Police say when that didn't work, he torched a nearby car. Broken glass and burn marks are still here. There are also charred, shattered windows on this building.
He needed attention here. And I know so many of us are trying so hard to get people to come here to see this, to be here. And he tried so hard to do that, too.
Tacoma police say Van Spronzen had a rifle, flares, and a satchel on him. Four officers opened fire. You can see all the bullet holes here. Van Spronzen died on scene.
Just speaks volumes of his inborn devotion.
Those at the vigil say Van Spronzen was a self-proclaimed anti-fascist.
Okay. So if you're an anti-fascist and yet your method is to attack the police and attack the laws you like, you're not working through the process, but you're working through violence in order to get your political result, I've got some bad news for you. You're a fascist. You're practicing fascism in your anti-fascism, which is a problem unto itself. Now, the friends, keep in mind, who said that this was not suicide by cop, and yet many of them got letters from him indicating that it was a goodbye. That should be the hint that he wasn't planning on coming back from this mission. As a matter of fact, in one story published in the Seattle Times, Deb Bartley, a friend of Mr. Van Spronzen of the last 20 years, self-described, said he was an anarchist and, again, anti-fascist, which this is kind of typical of the anti-fascists having these fascist habits. But she believes his attack was intended to provoke the fatal conflict. Quote, he was ready to end it. I think this was a suicide, but then he was able to kind of do it in a way that spoke to his political beliefs. I know he went down there knowing he was going to die. So, you know, based on that, if you're down and describing this fellow,
he murdered him, and he was probably just standing his ground.
No, neither one of those things are true. It's not a murder if police are stopping someone from using lethal force against a facility and you refuse to obey those commands. The officers involved in Tacoma, who have ranged from a new officer of, I think, 9 months of service on to one with a considerable amount of years served, they're all on administrative leave. But at this point, I think it's absurd to make the claim that this guy was not doing something that, I mean, even if he changed his mind on the suicide front, you can't deny that he was on his way down there to die. You know, what else do you think is going to happen? Now, he typed up a manifesto, and he uses the "to my comrades" line. You know, again, what does that remind you of? He says, "I regret that I will miss the rest of the revolution. Thank you for the honor of having been in your midst, giving me space to be useful, to feel that I was fulfilling my ideals has been the spiritual pinnacle of my life. Doing what I can to defend my precious and wondrous people is an experience too rich to describe." He says, "My trans comrades have transformed me, solidifying my conviction that we will be guided to a dreamed-of future by those most marginalized among us today. I have dreamed it so clearly that I have no regret for not seeing how it turns out. Thank you for bringing me so far along. I am Antifa. I stand with comrades around the world who act from the love of life in every permutation. Comrades who understand that freedom means real freedom for all and life worth living. Keep the faith, all power to the people," and so forth. So, and then there's a PS, it looks like here. "Don't let your silly government agency spend money," quote, "investigating," unquote, this one. "I was radicalized in civics class at 13 when we were taught about the Electoral College. It was at that point I decided that the status quo might be a house of cards. Further reading confirmed in the positive. I highly recommend reading," exclamation point. Then he says, "I'm not affiliated with any organization. I've disaffiliated from any organizations which disagree with my choice of tactics." He said, "The semi-automatic weapon I used was a cheap, home-built, unregistered Ghost AR-15, had 6 magazines. I strongly encourage comrades and incoming comrades to arm themselves. We are now responsible for defending people from the predatory state. Ignore the law in arming yourself if you have the luxury, comma, I did." So that's what I was given here as the manifesto that folks are passing around, that it's attributed or is allegedly from 69-year-old, the late Wilhelm von Spraunzen. Now, if so, if again, you're saying arm yourselves, you're saying that you are part of an organization, then at the end you say, "Trick, psych, I'm really not," it means you really are. And, you know, again, he read one point of view. There are other points of view as well. And in a large civic society, you know, you can't just make a declaration that it's your way or the highway and the law doesn't matter, because then you look just like an animal farm. Remember the animals that cooperated at the end of Animal Farm, the pigs with the humans, and nobody could tell the difference. You know, the so-called anti-fascists look increasingly like the fascists when that kind of stuff rolls around.
The Big Lead, top national.
No shock, President Trump said the raids were successful over the weekend, raids to round up people who are in the country illegally, but CBS News said things were pretty quiet. Manuel Bojorquez, I might be butchering that name, but it's how it's spelled, had the story.
Many of those groups believe that officials may have delayed those sweeps yesterday because of all that heightened publicity around them, but they're warning immigrant families that the threat is ongoing.
Immigration activists around the country are springing into action to help those threatened by the planned deportation arrests.
We know our rights and we are organized.
The expected crackdown is causing concern in immigrant communities around the country and here in South Florida. Pastor Howard Hardin says he's encouraging his congregation to support one another.
I think everybody knows someone who's affected by this, and I think every church is the same.
So far, sources tell CBS News activity has been limited to New York City, where Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents knocked on doors this weekend, but there were no arrests. Immigration officials say about 1 million people in the country have removal orders. Acting ICE Director Matthew Albin said Sunday the operation targets those who pose a threat to public safety.
We are doing targeted enforcement actions against specific individuals who have had their day in immigration court and have been ordered removed by an immigration judge.
But some Democrats say publicizing the crackdown is the administration's attempt to instill fear.
It's not about getting people who are security risks deported. It's about scaring everyone in the country. And it is also about changing the news.
It's a difficult thing. I've never really liked discussing immigration policy on the radio. And here's why. I feel like everybody's designed to or every policy position seems dedicated to not doing anything, you know, like not helping people have a better legal system. When the Democrats, remember, took over, they had supermajority with President Obama as president. And did they prioritize this fix, you know, that supposedly was already written, ready to go? They just couldn't quite get a majority to vote for it. It was all there already, but, you know, nothing. And then there are those who say, well, they had the Affordable Care Act to deal with. Well, yeah, you can chew gum and walk at the same time, too. This is something that supposedly has overwhelming support, a fix of some kind, and it just never goes anywhere. Then you have the situation where you are concerned about various aspects of illegal immigration. You also want compassion toward people who are seeking asylum. And then you have any statement that, you know, for example, you know, in King County here, we have people freaking out because the jails and the police force might actually cooperate with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Now, it seems to me that most of the time, you know, other than if, say, there was targeting of families who had reported a crime, which is not generally what people want, because you want to be able to enforce the law and you want people to report criminal behavior. But in general, you would want that information. That's exactly the kind of places you would want information shared among law enforcement agencies in order to uphold the law. And, you know, at some point you have some folks saying there should be no borders at all, which I don't see how that becomes feasible. And they'll also pretend that there's no economic consequence to that. So I feel like everybody's designed in one place or another to try to make the other side, the focus is on making the other side look bad and horrible and inexcusable and awful, rather than have the debate and talk about what could actually be done and what would actually benefit the nation, the people, those individuals trying to escape horrible countries, so that we could actually have, you know, some forward progress to alleviate the human suffering involved.
The Big Lead, top trending.
A lot of focus, trending accurate on this one, because it's all about Twitter. President Trump had said via Twitter that it was so interesting. This is from the real, at real Donald Trump on Twitter. So interesting to see, quote, progressive Democrat congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt and inept anywhere in the world, if they even have a functioning government at all, now loudly, .. and as it continues, and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest, most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. Why don't they go back and help fix that totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came, then come back and show us how? And then it goes on. Well, of course, the problem with that quote, or those tweets, is that the congresswomen he's talking about are all Americans. I think three of the four, I didn't even know any of them were born outside of the U.S., but I saw a report where one of them was born outside the United States, but they're all American citizens. So, you know, again, when you're saying, hey, go back, that's just a foolish and ignorant thing to say. The president responded to those comments and the controversy.
What am I supposed to do? Just wait for senators? No. These are four. So I disagree with Lindsay on that. That was the only thing. He said, aim higher, shoot higher. What am I going to do? Wait till we get somebody else in a higher position, higher office? These are people that hate our country. Right. Hey, John, they hate our country. Right. They hate it, I think, with a passion. Now, it's possible I'm wrong. The voter will decide. But when I hear the way they talk about our country, when I hear the anti-Semitic language they use, when I hear the hatred they have for Israel and the love they have for enemies like Al-Qaeda, then you know what? I will tell you that I do not believe this is good for the Democrat Party. Certainly it's not the party that I've known over the years.
One of the fascinating things about Trump is that he will take something and then, I mean, I didn't expect any apology to come forth, because in general, Trump tweets and speaks emotionally. He throws out a general category of what it is he's feeling about something, how it is he's feeling, and then lets that loose. And whether it's accurate or not is not his point. The point is to convey whatever emotion it is that he wants to convey. So You know, again, this is going to dominate Twitter, and this is one of the reasons why election watchers, here you have the economy going like gangbusters. You have unemployment down below 4%, you know, basically full employment. You have a lot of economic indicators on the rise, and yet the president's approval rating is hovering just below 46%, and Democrats are salivating looking at the state-by-state poll numbers in places the president has to win in order to get re-election. And this is the kind of thing that's the reason why. And speaking of presidential contenders,
the big lead, big local.
Governor Inslee captured a lot of headlines over the weekend. This is possibly his biggest splash in the national media yet. He was speaking to the Netroots Nation Conference in Philadelphia, basically a gathering. If CPAC is the gathering of conservatives and the right of center political world, Netroots is the left of center political world. Speaking in Philadelphia over the weekend, and he made this startling announcement.
He has centered his entire international relations on fear rather than confidence and on hope. And it seems to me that maybe one of the first acts as president is I had to think about getting a Secretary of State who has asked us to embrace more unity across the world and more love rather than hate. So my first act will be to ask Megan Rapinoe to be my Secretary of State. I haven't asked her yet, so this one could be a surprise to her.
Well played. Well played.
I actually believe this because I think what she has said that has inspired us so much is such an antithesis of the president's foreign policies.
All right, if he hadn't said, I actually believe this, if he'd have played it up more of as a joke, he'd be slightly better off. I think the whole thing, for a guy who's not being taken very seriously, if the first time you know, you get your big splash, it's because you're not being serious. It tends to diminish your prospects, and perhaps it explains why his top contributor has jumped into the fray solo instead. By the way, what does that say about Marianne Williamson at the Democrat debates? Here she is actually running for president. You know, she's got higher numbers than Inslee, and yet he's going all the way to the soccer star, taken away from the World Cup champion team. In order to go for someone who wants to institute love as foreign policy.
So, Mr. President, if you're listening, I want you to hear me, please. You have harnessed fear for political purposes, and only love can cast that out. So I have a feeling you know what you're doing. I'm going to harness love.
See, she was already ready to go. So Inslee could have easily just appointed her as his hypothetical Secretary of State, and he wouldn't do any harm to the soccer team either. But the headlines are a lot better with Rapinoe. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. You want to comment? You can text us on the Online Trading Academy text line. Text us at 98973. That's 98973. You can text us about any topic we've covered, or you can text us about a topic we should cover. Either way, on the line with me is Maria Frost. She is the director for the Center for Transportation at Washington Policy Center, as well as a former state representative and current research fellow with Washington Policy Center, Mark Harmsworth, to talk about some of the traffic congestion that we face and the transit agencies that claim to have solutions for us. Thanks so much for making the time this afternoon to both of you. Maria, I want to start with you. You have you've been writing about Sound Transit and a question that the Seattle Times Traffic Lab was asking. They're asking basically, is it possible for these light rail projects to get done sooner? So because we keep being promised these wonderful links that are going to have commuters speeding back and forth from Linwood all the way to, or from Everett all the way to Tacoma and beyond. When you took a look at the answers to that, what were your overall thoughts as far as the answers that Sound Transit gave?
Well, I wasn't surprised that the answer was give Sound Transit more money, right? That's always the answer. Give Sound Transit more money and they will do better. They will deliver these projects faster. In fact, if you recall, going back to June of 2016, before Sound Transit 3 passed, this project initially, which started as a $15 billion tax package then morphed into a $50 billion tax package. And Sound Transit officials made the case that, hey, we can build this faster if you just give us $4 billion more, which was an incredible thing to say because people hadn't even decided if they wanted light rail in the first place. And so now, as Sound Transit has delivered or has reported that they're going to be delivering East Link, Linwood Link, Federal Way Link, over budget, late, they're also saying in the same breath, hey, we can deliver ST3 faster. Just give us more money. And I think that is completely unbelievable, especially because the agency has continued to report cost overruns and delays. There's absolutely no reason to trust that they could meet a faster deadline.
Now, if I remember correctly, and Harmsworth, if you recall this, feel free to chime in. I thought that Sound Transit started the ST3 request with about a $9 or $10 billion request, and then it kind of ballooned to 14 or 15, and then by the time it got to the ballot, that's when it really took off. Am I right about that? Because that's what they were promising to do something with first, and then it just kind of exploded once they realized, oh my gosh, public's not paying attention. Let's just ask for the moon. Right.
Yeah, and that's basically what they came down to the legislature and asked for, was around $15 billion. And thanks for having me on again, David. I appreciate that. And obviously, once they started going through their what I believe is a deceptive campaign to increase the amount that can actually go out to bond to get up to where we ended up, which was $54 billion. And then even on top of that, you have all the debt service you got to repay, and some estimates are close to $100 billion for 13 miles of light rail. And ironically, this weekend we have the Apollo 11 presentation, and the anniversary coming up here soon. It only costs us $25.4 billion to get to the moon, and it's costing us $100 billion to get to Everett. So this agency is out of control. It doesn't know how to control its costs, and it has no accountability to the public at all.
So, Maria, if there was, I recall there being three ways that they wanted, they were talking about possibilities of gathering more money into Sound Transit. One of them was dealing with kind of a tax by the mile approach. But wouldn't that require, or would it, wouldn't that require changing the way we collect transportation dollars? Because aren't they supposed to be protected toward roads with the highway fund, or would that be different?
So what the Traffic Lab reported with this was that one of the potential ways or potential revenue streams that transit officials see where they can get more money from the public is an increase in the agency share of federal dollars through the federal fuel tax, which we pay 49.4 cents in state fuel tax, and we pay 18.4 cents per gallon in federal tax. And that rate hasn't been increased since 1993. And 20% of that federal fuel tax rate is diverted to transit, which is not what happens at the state level. And the connection that I make in my blog where I write about this is if Sound Transit wants to go after federal fuel tax money, then it's a no-brainer that they would probably on their wish list is some way where they can secure fuel tax dollars at the state level, which they can't because it's protected by the 18th Amendment for highway spending only. But as you point out, there is a mechanism or a tool that's being developed right now called the Road Usage Charge, which would be very likely a mileage tax that's collected from drivers on for every mile that they drive and could be diverted to support transit rather than roads and highways. So we could actually end up seeing less money going to roads.
After all these billions
rather
are
than
spent,
more.
Yeah, after all these billions are spent, and you know, you've detailed how there could be some fast and loose games being played with commuters and taxpayers regarding the collection of these non-gas taxes that are being bandied about. But after all is said and done, let's say Sound Transit was completely done with all with ST3. They managed to build everything. It's a miracle. How many? Are the highways clear? How many people are actually riding this thing?
Well, by the time this is built out, it's going to serve a very, very small percentage of people. Maybe 3% of people take light rail. So I think really this idea that we need to focus on building light rail faster, I think it's a complete distraction because it has nothing to do with the other 97% of people that are looking for some kind of relief and improved mobility on our state's transportation system. Right,
hold
what
that
about
thought,
those people?
Yeah, Mark, your latest blog shows details a study that's showing building road capacity would actually be a plus. And we've been told for years here that we can't build our way out of traffic congestion. We can't build our way to a better life here in the Pacific Northwest. And basically, you're citing this new National Bureau of Economic Research study saying that that's not actually true. We could build roads and have some success. Explain.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I absolutely disagree with our Secretary of Transportation's recent statements that he's basically giving up on fixing congestion. He doesn't think it can be done. And I don't think that's true. And so this is research that the National Bureau of Economic Research put out where a couple of respected economists propose, and they support this with a lot of data and different calculations, that for a relatively minimal, in the big picture of things, investment into around 7,000 routes between 900 cities in the U.S., we can improve our economic situation, and we can actually save money because we can now move freight more quickly between our cities. And in some cases, they've shown through some of their calculations that these rates of returns you can get by moving freight more quickly, moving people more quickly, again, with a relatively minimal amount of additional capacity, can save hundreds of millions of dollars.
And it would do so by what? Reducing the freight costs, reducing the charges that people have to input into the cost of, you know, basically everything that travels by road?
Yeah, exactly. And if everything that we buy, or just about everything we buy, is shipped in through truck and through different trailers, systems and so on. We obviously, there's freight on rail as well, but that's predominantly not consumer goods. Yeah. So, you know, there's always a little extra that has to be tacked on there for the freight. And by building these roads in a way, again, targeted investments, we can see huge economic benefit. We can see additional jobs being created. And then when Roger Millar talks about it's too expensive to spend $115 billion to actually fix our transportation. And if you remember the previous numbers from SoundTrans, it's free. If we'd spent that money on our roads, we'd be building ourselves out of congestion right now. It just shows you the reluctance of WashDOT to actually deal with the congestion because they're more focused on managing us and managing where we go and how we go and when we can go. You see this with the ruck charge that Maria just mentioned as well. It's about, for them, it's about controlling an asset that's not really theirs. It's ours as a community. So minimal investments, and we see some significant returns.
Maria Frost and Mark Harmsworth with Washington Policy Center, thanks so much for making the time. You can read the whole blog, or both blogs, rather, at washingtonpolicy.org. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Peter Thiel, a Facebook board member, is a big fan of President Trump, and he's taking aim at Google and the tech industry now. He says that these companies focused on global markets are brushing aside U.S. interests. And he says that Google has been agreeing to work closely with China to get its search engine back into the country. And they let lapse a U.S. Defense Department contract that gave the military access to its artificial intelligence tools. Thiel says the AI aspects of this technology clearly has military applications and is essentially a military weapon. He says, quote, "We've been a lot more dishonest about that in Silicon Valley than the nuclear physicists were in the 1940s. He then suggested Google's actions were, quote, "seemingly treasonous," and asked whether DeepMind or Google senior management had been infiltrated, or I should say when asked, had been infiltrated by foreign intelligence agencies. He said, quote, "These questions need to be asked by the FBI and the CIA. And I'd like them to be asked in a not excessively gentle manner," he says. So, you know, talk about declaring war on the tech giants. I mean, this is all about calling them to task and making a pretty firm declaration that they're on notice. So it'll be interesting to see how that how this scrutiny plays out, given his influence within the current administration. It'll be interesting to see if additional scrutiny or if there's any additional action taken on those particular deals, particularly with China. And speaking of technology, a French inventor and entrepreneur on Sunday was soaring above the Champs-Élysées in Paris. He looked like the Silver Surfer in many ways, or somebody out of a comic book movie. He had basically a surfboard and it was floating above with a rifle floating above the parade, showing off this basically a jet propulsion system. It was pretty awesome looking, and I thought, I want one in order to commute in the Puget Sound. I mean, I looked at it and I thought, you know, I don't know what it costs to run, but, you know, if it looks like it might actually be something akin to a motorcycle. You know what I mean? So I just looked at it and I thought it can go up to 100 miles per hour, 118 miles per hour, and it can run for 10 minutes. So, you know, we already have these electrical plug-in things for Tesla everywhere. You know, if I could get one of these surfboards to just commute around the Sound, you know, and I would gladly leave traffic, you know, that, you know, how people think you want Sound Transit and additional light rail trains in the desperate and misguided hope that the people next to you on the highway won't be there anymore. But in this case, we could actually escape. Although I can't imagine if those kind of things caught on, how different human beings reacting at the same time, how you would end up staying on the board. You know what I mean? Like, get 20 people flying side by side, and unless they're trained like the Blue Angels, I just picture a total collapse and a lot of spinal and leg injuries resulting. Good news, doing five things could reduce your risk of Alzheimer's by 60%, according to a new study. Those five things: ditch red meat, take a brisk walk regularly, do the Sunday crossword puzzle or other mental games, and stick to one glass of red wine at dinner. A new study presented at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference in Los Angeles says that doing these simple things can present a dramatically lower risk, up to 60%. It can reduce your risk of Alzheimer's, even for those who are genetically predisposed to the disease, which I thought was fascinating here. The first report was compiled by Rush University Medical Center in Chicago and tracked 2,765 individuals. So it was a major study, and the magnitude of the effect was also shocking to researchers as well. And in a related study, they say that, you know, as I said, ditch red meat. You're asking, what do you get instead? Maybe chicken? Not so fast. Apparently eating ants and other insects could protect you against cancer due to the antioxidants. All kinds of opportunities out there.